This month, we tour the Pacific Northwest and Alaska. As we noted last month, the FCC's early microfiche files allow us to dig down into station histories by their FCC activity. But we've also learned there's so much detail, we just can't do a good job representing the entire picture. So we have to take a kind of a high-level look at this. Collectively, there are 331 AM stations in that region today, 41 of them in Alaska. When you boil that list down to surviving pioneer stations who really paid their dues, the list dwindles to 27. And when you further narrow that list, in the interest of time, we find that with a few notable exceptions, most of the station development that merits our footnotes occurred, predictably, in Seattle, Portland, and Spokane. We do note that a fairly common request appearing in the FCC files is stations, especially in smaller markets, filing for silent periods, giving as a reason a lack of trained operators. This was happening a lot during the war years. Other than that, many of the smaller stations came on, moved around here and there, as everybody did in the early days, and finally ended up as we see them today in the NRC radio log. So, not much of a story there. So we'll start with Portland, Oregon. KBPS is an old-timer. Its first call was KFIF, and it was a high school station. Operating on 360 meters with everyone else, time-sharing, they got an hour a day. They'd broadcast 13 minutes, pause for 2 minutes for ship distress calls, then go on for the next 13 minutes, and so on. In the mid-1920s, they moved to 1400, where they had to drop power to 50 watts and share with KIT, then known as KFEC. KFIF was then pushed down to 1310, still 50 watts, still time-sharing, but now the record shows they were sharing with KBTR. It may be that KBTR was a change in KFEC's call. To get away from the time-sharing, KFIF next moved to 1420 and in 1930 changed the station ID to KBPS. Well, the call sign changes were done, but not the dial jumping. NARBA moved them to 1450, where they were supposed to share time with KXL. This was in 1941. Well, poor KXL had been a time-sharing victim everywhere, as we'll see. We'll also learn that KXL quickly filed for a move to 750 to stop this nonsense, but that's getting ahead of our story. KBPS stayed at 1450 with a minimal amount of power, probably because they were a school-operated station. The radio feds allowed KBPS to suspend operation during summer months during the 30s, and they operated less than a full schedule for many years. That made them a target for a commercial takeover attempt in 1947, but KBPS shook it off. Today, KBPS operates an NPR-based news talk format in Portland. Now to the mighty KEX. They hit the ground running in 1927 with an application for 5 kilowatts on 1240. That was a lot of power in those days, but before they could build up their plant, they were moved to 1250 with 2,500 watts and quickly reassigned to 1080 under General Order 40 in 1928. Next, they moved to 1180 at 5 kilowatts, where they shared time with KOB Albuquerque. KEX was granted two-thirds time, KOB one-third. I wonder how they carved up the time. Didn't matter. In 1931, KEX proposed and was granted simultaneous daytime operation with KOB, but still somehow time-sharing at night. The stations also tested simultaneous nighttime operation on 1180. Those test results have eluded the record, but we'll have more to say when we preview KOB. In 1939, KEX moved to 1160 and unlimited 5-kilowatt operation. NARBA moved them to 1190, and a few years later, KEX turned up 50 kilowatts full-time, with a directional antenna at night protecting WoWo. It's not known whether KEX was able to relax that 1190 protection when WoWo did its traitorous turn to reduce coverage in behalf of the New York station. KGW in Portland came on the air in 1922, did the usual frequency jumping thanks to the feds, ended up on 620, where today they operate talk radio as KPOJ. 25,000 watts day, 10 at night, U2. KGW was one of the stations that tested facsimile by radio overnights back in 1938. This technology was the forerunner of the data transmission systems that were used to trigger alerting systems during World War II and in the 1970s to enable hearing-assisted receivers. Nothing too unusual about Portland's KWJJ on the air in 25 as KFWV did the channel dance and changed call to KWJJ in 1927. In 1934, during the famous 1040-1060 confabulations down south and out east that we heard about last month, KWJJ received authorization for 1060, but also received experimental authorization for 1040, just in case, as they chased those other guys around. NARBA gave them 1080, but with limited authority and low power. The FCC wasn't yet certain that more than two high-power stations ought to coexist on the same channel. But KWJJ slowly pushed the power authorizations until in 1962 they received a DA2 license for 50 kilowatts day, 10 at night, full-time. KWJJ is now known as KFXX, doing sports in Portland. And so to KXL, first licensed under that call in 1926. After the usual frequency shuffle and time-sharing, NARBA 1941 gave them that graveyard channel, 1450, at 250 watts. As we mentioned, KXL lost no time in moving. They applied for 750 kilocycles at 10 kilowatts, DA1 limited time, and that operation began later in 1941. The FCC records show KXL was granted some unusual temporary authorizations, such as permission to operate at night at the end of World War II, to broadcast the opinions of the people of the Northwest about VJ Day. Presumably, these broadcasts took the form of man-on-the-street interviews, but we also have to assume the politicians were in there burning up airtime. It wasn't until 1959 that KXL was granted 50 kilowatts, still DA1 limited time. The breakdown of the clears, however, meant that KXL would be able to go full time, but that didn't happen until 1981, when they received authority for 10 kilowatts night. Now they're operating at 50 day at 20 kilowatt night DA2, providing a talk format to the Portland region, but sadly, most of their energy is being sent offshore to keep the fish warm. There were a few other notes of interest in the region. KBND came on the air to serve Bend, Oregon in late 1938, 1310, 250 watts. NARBA put them on graveyard 1340, but they were able to find 1270 available, then found they could do 5 kilowatts on 1110, a kilowatt at night DA2. Like any broadcaster with a good consultant, KBND found a way to reach even higher power. And today they operate News Talk at 10 kilowatts day, 5 kilowatts night, U12, which Dave will tell you means non-directional day in critical hours and directional at nights. Jerome, Idaho is just outside Twin Falls, and this little town had a radio station in 1925 called KFXD, on the air on 1460 with 10 mighty watts. They jumped to 1470 to 1420 and then moved to Nampa, Idaho in 1929. Once there, they upgraded and went to 1200 until NARBA bumped them to 1230. Well, still itchy, KFXD moved to 580 in the 1940s, still serving Nampa. Meanwhile, KIDO comes into the picture. They came on as KFAU in Boise in 1922, got to 4,000 watts on 1070, moved to 1050, where for a while they shared time with KOB. That didn't work, so they went to 1250, time sharing with KXL at night. To get away from that, they moved to 1350, and then NARBA shoved KIDO up to 1380. Well, that wasn't enough to confuse listeners, so finally they went to 630. That was in 1951. For 5 months in 1978, they were known as KMNA, before they sensibly returned to their heritage call KIDO. Okay, so far? And this is where NAMPA and KFXD come back into the picture. In 2002, Clear Channel swapped the call letters so that KFXD was now licensed to Boise on the 630 channel, 5 kilowatt U4, and KIDO appears in NAMPA on 580, 5 kilowatts U2. Why? Sheesh. North to Alaska we go. A heritage call, KFAR, was first heard on 610 in 1938. 1 kilowatt. Interesting licensees in Alaska, Midnight Sun Broadcasting and Borealis Broadcasting. KFAR was one of the western stations not affected by NARBA 1941, and they were able to upgrade to 5 kilowatts, then moved to 660, unlimited time with 10 kilowatts. It's a tough one to capture now, since there's a second 660 station in Alaska. But their talk format is worth trying for if you live anywhere west of the Mississippi and in the Northwest area. Anchorage, Alaska is home to KFQD, first on the air in 1924, under the auspices of the Anchorage Radio Club. They began at 1,000, were moved around to 7 other frequencies, and then received a permit in 1954 to move to 730 at 10 kilowatts. In 1965, KFQD moved to 750, 10 kilowatts unlimited time, and by 1981 had developed their facilities to 50 kilowatts, full-time non-directional. There they stand today on 750, with a news talk format, serving a lot of cold water and icy mountains, and making a great target for international DXers. Back in the lower 48, we moved to Washington. KGA in Spokane, another of those 1B stations that you'd expect to have some stability, on the air in 1927 on 880, then to 1150 and to 1470, all over the course of a year. They tried experimental authorization on 900, preparing for a possible channel opening. But in 1935, they were ordered to stay on 1470, 5 kilowatts. And NARBA 1941 moved them to 1510, where they developed 50 kilowatts DA night. In recent years, as we know, KGA reduced their nighttime operation to 15 kilowatts, to the proposed advantage of another station in the Southwest. KHQ was another pioneer station in Spokane, in fact, the oldest station in Washington. Their data file at the FCC begins in 1922, but in Seattle, not Spokane. KHQ shared the 1,000 and 833 kilocycle channels with several other stations, and in 1925, KHQ moved to Spokane, probably for the weather. Quoting from the KHQ history page, there are at least 2 accounts of KHQ's moving from Seattle to Spokane. According to David Richardson's Puget Sounds, the owner tired of Seattle, packed the apparatus of KHQ into the sidecar of his motorcycle, and moved to Spokane. Another account written by John Fahey states that he packed KHQ in a Model T Ford to haul it from Seattle to Spokane. Whichever version of the move is correct, KHQ was reborn in Spokane on 30 October 1925, amidst a lot of celebration and fanfare. Well, apparently, quite a few businessmen didn't think Spokane needed a station. After some additional frequency jumping, KHQ went to 590 and remains there today as News Talk KQNT, 5 kilowatts non-directional full-time. It's one of the few such non-directional 5 kilowatt regionals full-time. Another that comes to mind immediately is the station we formerly knew as WOW Omaha. I'm sure there are others. They'll turn up as we proceed. KJR was probably the first station in Seattle. They came on in the early 1920s as KGFA. Channel jumping ensued, and KJR ended up at 1,000 after the smoke cleared, where they waged a brilliant battle in the ratings wars for many years. KOMO, meanwhile, as we'll hear, wasn't able to get the blowtorch power they wanted, so in the 1940s, while Como was at 950, their owner bought KJR 1,000, moved the KJR call to 950, and Como to 1,000. There is some confusion that maybe KJR was actually on 970 during the 40s, but I don't think that would have been the case given the FCC rules about channel spacing. Maybe one of our listeners knows for sure. It's also possible they were indeed on 970 and consequently moved to 950, where today they operate sports, full-time 50 kilowatts U4. Como had come on around 1922, did the frequency hop, and ended up on either 950 or 970. Their attempts at high power weren't getting them anywhere until the KJR opportunity came along. As we know, KOMO and KJR were co-owned, and they did the call swap. During the transition, Como and KJR co-located studios and even built an auxiliary tower site and licensed it for both Como and KJR emergency operation. The FCC approved the change. NARBA confirmed Como on 1000, and apps for 50 kilowatts were revalidated. It looks like Como didn't get to 50, though, until the late 1940s from Vashon Island in Puget Sound. Today, they're a News Talk operation, 50 kilowatts full-time, protecting Chicago at night. Another heritage station in Seattle is Cairo, on the air since 1927 when they ID'd as KPCB. KIRO, too, moved around a lot, time-sharing with others in the early days. For a period, they settled on 650, but they also requested authority to experiment on 710. By the mid-30s, they were firmly lodged at 710, changing their call to KIRO while they built up their facilities. In 1941, they moved to Vashon Island, built out a 50-kilowatt plant with directional antenna, for a while the largest such operation west of the Mississippi. NARBA left them on 710, but tried to reduce their power to 1 kilowatt. That was quickly adjudicated. By happenstance, shortly after Cairo came on at 50 kilowatts, the materials shortages of World War II meant that their competitors would not be able to catch up with new equipment until after the end of the war. Cairo today is an ESPN affiliate, and its signal continues to blanket the Northwest. KVOL Seattle has had an interesting time. Licensed in 1922 as KFOA, they changed to KOL in 1930. They, too, did the frequency dance, landing on 1270 to timeshare with KTW, one of KTW's interim channels. NARBA 1941 moved them to 1300. KOL became KMPS and then back to KOL. In 2002, due to losing its broadcast location, KOL installed a temporary 1,000-watt transmitter on a moored boat and began to broadcast from a 175-foot ship antenna in one of the waterways in Seattle. This was the only floating radio station in the U.S. In 2007, the station built out to 50 kilowatts on 1300, but you'll recall from our earlier reports, this new installation became the subject of violent reaction from a nearby petroleum facility, which claimed that the station's signal strength exceeds safe limits at the loading docks, creating a potential source of ignition for the combustibles handled there. A spark caused by the flow of RF energy from the cranes, which act as antennas, to other objects, could trigger an explosion. The complaint is under review as KKOL continues to broadcast at reduced power on 1300 as a business news voice in Seattle. KGY was first licensed to a Benedictine college in Lacey, Washington, near Olympia and just southwest of Seattle. Began life in 1922, did the usual channel hopping, and made it through the 1920s at 1200. For a time in the early 30s, the KGY licensed authorized them to cease operations in the summer months. In 1932, they moved to 1210 and changed city of license to Olympia, finally replacing their 10 watts with an upgrade to 100. NARBA moved them to 1240, and today this pioneer station is but another graveyard operation, now licensed to Olympia and doing adult contemporary. And that, in as few words as we could do it, is a snapshot of the early history of some of the Pacific Northwest stations. There are many others who deserve a footnote or two, but they just don't fit our time constraints. As we said at the outset, we're here to provide information. So if you like or don't like this sort of column, I can still be reached by email at mark4@dernberger.com. Mark with the number 4. At Durenberger.com, DurenBerger.
KVI Seattle, for listening at its best. KVI Seattle, voice of the Pacific Northwest.